It's Tuesday, October 15th, 2013, and you're listening to episode 315 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 35 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
This is Wayne.
This is Stu.
This is Stork.
Once again, we have Stu and Stork from Happy Jacks joining us. I want to thank them for, I'd say, joining us again, but actually this is a continuation of a recording that was...
Spoilers.
Yeah.
Come on. You know,
this is like the veil, man. It's the mystery.
I know.
Behind the curtain.
Look, the best advice I can give anyone about movies, and I'll keep this real short because you guys will start off on some long...
Boy, howdy.
Interminable wank.
Yes.
Is never watch the making ofs, because I tell you, nothing ruined the Lord of the Rings for me quite like watching all the making of, and now all I see is the models.
Really?
Yes.
I appreciate a lot of movies more after watching making ofs.
The best making of I've ever seen, and this is going to sound so lame, was on the movie Seven, Brad Pitt and Kelly and stuff. They had a documentary about color correction. And it was a guy in an editing booth doing color correction with a computer to the movie. And he is talking about the entire craft of color correction and what it does and how it works. Fascinating.
Yeah. Sometimes I think it's a matter of how much of a fanboy you are of something as well.
Yeah.
Because the way Chad is about Doctor Who, that's kind of how I am about the Planet of the Apes series. And I've watched every making of documentary I've ever been able to get my hands on. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot that just is fascinating about the costuming that they did.
Well, I think there's just something about keeping the magic. I was talking to an artist that I know who does most of his work off of modeled shots. At one point I asked him if I could see some of the modeled shots, and he said he would really prefer not, because he's like, some of these things that look so cool in the finished product, it looks really dumb when, instead of like, you know, some badass with a gun, you just have like some random guy standing in the proper lighting, but he's like in the garage holding a drill. It just destroys the picture.
I had that with, what was that Sean Connery movie where they're trying to break into Alcatraz?
The Rock.
I had that with The Rock. I saw it in theaters and I'm like, wow, that movie was awesome. Yeah, Rock. Then I rented it on DVD or whatever. And actually, I think I bought it. I like the movie so much. I watched the making of before I rewatched the movie. And they had the special effects of the divers going through to swimming down there. And it is a little figure on a pole on a stick, and his legs go, and it's just like,
gone forever.
And then I watch the movie, and I'm like, I can't get it out of my mind.
I have to say, at this point, I'm pulled out every time I hear the Wilhelm scream.
Oh, I hate the Wilhelm scream. That is so overdone. I hate it.
That should get you 10 years in federal prison.
Yeah.
Stu's wife works in Hollywood, and I work in Hollywood, so we are all movies are already spoiled for us. So. Yeah. We're going to have to start this over again, because we got derailed.
No, we'll just have to get back on topic. So the topic we're going to talk about this time,
welcome to Fear the Boot,
is playing the good guys. Now, we've done episodes on playing the bad guys, and playing the good guys seems so simple, right? We're always playing the good guys,
except you murder whole villages and take all their stuff.
Yeah. And you just do it because they just so happen to be orcs
or so they're hobos.
Yes.
Yeah. So
because they're hobos,
I'm actually going to have our friends out there in California set this one up, because Stu, you were mentioning to me a paladin campaign and some craziness with that. So I want you to set this one up for us.
Okay. Well, the game in question is Legend of the Five Rings. And one of the co-hosts on our show referred to it as, oh, that's that game where everyone plays paladins. Because
it's not.
It isn't. But there is, if you're playing samurai or shugenja or any member of that celestial order, you are
held to a strict code of conduct.
This seven tenets of Bushido. Stepping back from that, in most cases, I think most parties are probably made up of sociopaths. If they don't, yes. I don't think they start out wanting to be sociopaths, but for some reason they become that. And I've seen that happen, especially in fantasy campaigns, but even in modern day ones. Everyone wants to set buildings on fire. Everyone wants to torture or kill before they have to do anything complicated. They're always looking for the easy way out.
Yes.
One of the reasons that I wanted to play L5R is because there was that limit on the characters.
I actually want to preface this. It actually started earlier with our 4E game, where we were literally torturing people for information. And Stu was like, God, you guys are just evil. It's like, well, but we need the information. How else do we get this?
It's something I really, really want. This guy is a pizza. It's my pizza. Well, why is it your pizza? Because he paid for it, and I really want it.
He's a hobgoblin. It's my loot.
That's right.
But that does speak to the problem. I mean, you guys have all played in campaigns where, like, there's suddenly an NPC has a secret, and, well, we torture him till we get it.
Ugh.
And then it right?
Gross.
I've seen that. Typically, my character is the one that has to be away from the scene for it to happen. Because I tend to play characters that wouldn't allow that
to
happen.
Well, I'm the person who has to be the person away.
Right, I don't want to get cut off on the torture thing, because we had a huge to-do about that on a prior episode. But I do think the point that Stu raised is absolutely correct, which is many players, I'm not going to say all players, but many players in many circumstances are looking for the shortest distance from point A to point B, and whatever chaos, mayhem, or moral shortcuts that involves will be taken. If that's
destruction. Can you say that again? I like that. Moral shortcuts.
If that's destruction, you're in California. You see these all the time.
There's morals in California?
Yes.
Only when they're written into the script.
But the point being, if burning down the building or killing the orc tribe or whatever gets you what you need faster, you're going to do it because of the fact that players tend to be very goal-oriented. You know, I want to accomplish this, and so I'm going to accomplish this in the most expedient way possible. How we get there really doesn't matter. The ends will always justify the means.
And explosions are cool.
Is that because we're playing a game, and we as players know we're playing a game, and expect that there aren't going to be real consequences to horrible actions?
I certainly think that's a part of it, because you kill somebody from the town guard because he caught you sneaking in through the gate. Well, in a game, he doesn't have a wife and three kids and friends and a father.
In the vast majority of role-playing games out there, 90% of the rules are combat. You're killing things. And that comes from the wargaming roots. War is about killing. And I think that there's a sort of tradition in that.
In most games, there's no mental consequence for killing.
Right.
Like, in the real world, you kill somebody, you're going to have to deal with that mentally.
Well, maybe you are, but...
Haven't yet.
Nice. No,
you know what? You have a point there, because there's something that's been sticking in my mind, which is, it's genre-specific. If I can elaborate a little. Like, I was watching a show the other day on the plague, right? The actual Black Plague that happened in the Middle Ages. And people were literally dying everywhere. Death was everywhere. Death was a common companion. Death meant very little to those people. Transported to the modern day, death means a lot more. It's a much more profound thing, right? So when you're playing in the Middle Ages, you're going around with a sword and you're killing anything and everything, and it doesn't really mean anything. Death is just part of the landscape. When you transpose it to modern times, it's much more impactful, and there's many more consequences. I think that playing in a fantasy genre tends to spawn what we might call evil or bad behavior, but I don't see it translating that well into modern times. You know, the police show up. If you start torturing somebody for information, they go tell their friends, or their bodies get found. There's many more consequences involved.
Well, and an action in that time period that we may consider evil now may have been the social norm then. I think that plays into it as well when you deal with some of the fantasy and things like that, and anything in a different time period is just what is moral as far as society goes changes over time.
That genre lends itself to a brutal atmosphere anyway. How many times have you been in a bar fight and somebody dies and we all laugh it off in a fantasy situation? Right?
High five. Good kill.
Nailed
hey, can
it.
I have his boots?
Right there is a great example of evil, right?
You know?
And that's
horrible.
That's,
but that horrible evil.
And yet we do it.
Yes.
Because the genre plays into that.
You don't have to kill in a role-playing game to have fun. I think it's sad that that must be said. I think that there's a lot of role-playing games out there where combat's a part of it. It's a high fluid, you know, it's like if you play a pirate game. Pirates get into a lot of combat, and they buckle their swashes and that sort of thing. And yes, you kind of expect that. But there are other genres out there where you don't have to kill all the time.
I play superhero games. We don't kill.
Yeah, exactly.
All of us have a code that we don't kill. we mechanically knock the enemy out, we never kill.
Right.
In our Legend of the Five Rings game, we've done 13 sessions of it so far. We record it and release an actual play of it. And when the fourth player joined the game, which I believe was like the fourth or fifth session, and that was the first character who played a wizard, Shugenja, it's the only magic wielder in the game. Everyone was sort of chomping at the bit to see how this character performed in combat. But we didn't have a combat.
And we still haven't really.
Well, we had one.
Yeah.
We had one combat in the subsequent eight sessions or seven sessions since then. I started getting emails from people. When are you guys going to have combat? This is just from people listening, not the players. And the players were starting to chomp at the bit, too. Yeah. And it's like, when is it going to be a fight? And everyone is enjoying the game. They're enjoying the story that's happening around the table. But they just want blood. They want to see this new character kick butt.
But that's really it. Because we've gone on record as saying it. Why is it combat has to be the only resolution to a problem? Right. And because a lot of games, that's
right.
Combat is the resolution to every situation, and that doesn't sit well with me.
Right. I agree with you. I completely agree with you. And I think that
on the other hand, if I have a lightning bolt, I want to use it.
I think that there's genre things that you want that in there. Like Dan and I, years ago, we played in a game where we were special forces commandos in, I think, Iraq. Or something.
Somewhere in the Middle East.
Somewhere in the Middle East during one of the conflicts. We were American soldiers and we were training people of whatever country we were in to fight the brutal dictator.
We were force multipliers.
Yeah, we're force multipliers. You could play that game without getting in any combat, but on the other hand, you kind of expect to get into some combat. Again, like with the pirate example, you could play a pirate game without getting in any combat, but you kind of want to. But on the other hand, you play a superhero game or you play a game that, like our Dresden game, there's a lot of evil stuff out there, but we didn't get into combat for large swashes of that. I had a character that racked up a huge kill count, more kills than all of the other players combined. And I had a second character that didn't kill anything, didn't even attack anything.
Well, and I think something that I want to drive home here and make absolutely clear is that when
you're a bad person and you should feel bad for being bad.
Is that if you're playing a role-playing game, part of what you want out of it might be the excitement of conflict. Mm-hmm. Part of what you want out of it might be the fact that you don't have to deal with those moral consequences. You can have really big spectacles, that don't necessarily have all these complicated questions and whatnot. And that's okay. But I think really the underlying question here that we're wrestling with is so many people, when they play a role-playing game, think they're playing the good guys.
Mm-hmm.
When really, if you were to sit back and to look at those characters in any other moral context, these are not individuals that probably most people would call good.
Right.
And it really is complicated. It really is difficult to play somebody who is genuinely good. And, on one hand, I certainly want to believe it's possible to do without playing somebody who is only good by virtue of being detached. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't get in combat. I'm a pacifist. I just talk to people. I don't break the law. I'm completely removed from the situation. And really what I see there, in a sense, is someone who's almost being evil through inaction.
We've really tied on to combat here, and combat doesn't make a character a bad guy.
No.
I mean, let's look at a zombie game. You're shooting zombies in the head. You're not a bad guy for doing it. You're playing a fantasy game. You're rushing in to rescue the princess, and you're fighting on the way to do it. You're not a bad guy for fighting.
Just because I am bad guy does not mean I am bad guy.
Well, the zombie thing exactly. is kind of a little different, yes. But to me, it's not about consequences. That's not what makes someone a good person. That's not what makes someone a good guy. Someone who does the right thing because there are consequences is someone who has been cowed by the law.
Yeah.
What makes someone a good guy is someone who has a conscience. And it's like, I'm not going to go kill that baby orc because, well, it's a baby. How would I think if it was my baby? And I think this is why people rail against people who play paladins, because for a lot of players, I think that paladin represents your conscience and you don't want to have one because you've made a character that's too thin to have a conscience.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, you're taking away all my Achilles stuff. You're gonna preach to me every time I do something bitching with my Achilles moves.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's where, if you're going to have a game where you're playing good guys, you have to have not just a code that you lose your spells if you don't follow it, or the town guard's going to take you away, but you need to, the players need to buy into this. They need to build the character from the ground up that has a moral center.
And I think you're right in that. And I think this is something that D&D got right. And I certainly do not want to start an alignment wank, because I don't think we've gone to alignment wank in the classical sense. But I think one thing D&D got right is that there is a different axis of lawfulness versus actual moral goodness.
Yeah. You can be evil and lawful.
Precisely. As he said, you can be someone who has been cowed by the system, who has sworn to a code or whatever, but when the player actually plays the character, they do not look at the character or the game through a lens of depth and reality that actually thinks about issues of conscience and consequence. And when I say consequence, I don't necessarily mean the way we've been using the word, but consequences. And I have to wake up with this tomorrow morning. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily the cops are going to come for me, but I have degraded who I am by participating in this, by someone who wants to actually set right the things, not that the dragon did wrong, but the things they did wrong while trying to stop the dragon.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I played a character once, and it is the bard that everyone makes fun of, and he had a moment like that. He was not a good guy by any means, but he wasn't the kind of guy that just outright kills people. And Dan's character at the time, Gnarl, that we've talked about so many times, led him to a spot where he killed someone in cold blood, basically. And he immediately went over in a corner and puked.
Good.
And then for the next,
that was my favorite.
For the next couple sessions, that was something that I kept playing up, that he was dealing with the fact that he wasn't a good guy to begin with, but now he's crossed a line he hadn't crossed before.
And there's different shades of good guy or bad guy too. I mean, like your character, he was sort of a bon vivant. And
I'm sorry. You're speaking French. What the hell does that mean?
He liked the ladies. But,
a ladies man. Yes. Yeah, Bon Vivant is so much clearer than ladies man. Okay, go ahead.
So, he was an adventurer, swashbuckler, and he had a very loose moral compass. But he wasn't a murderer, and he wasn't like a horrible person. And he was, if he were given the situation, he'd generally try and do good until he crossed a line. And that line was, he killed my favorite NPC.
And that was not the one Gnarl pushed him into.
No, that, it wasn't.
That was purely a situational thing.
Gnarl actually wanted him alive.
Your NPC pushed the wrong button.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
You bring up situations. It's a slippery slope when you talk about evil being situational. But, you know, the classic example, well, at least in my mind, is that, you know, who do you want with you in the trenches? Do you want that mass murderer who isn't afraid of pulling the trigger? Or do you want the book-educated guy that can't? And is the mass murderer evil when he's fighting on a war to protect people?
I think I'm more scared of the book-educated mass murderer, to be honest with
you. Yeah, right? That's when things get gray, is in situationally. You know, it's like, well, we're fighting for a greater good. Well, aren't a lot of evil people fighting for the greater good? Nazis, perhaps?
Yeah. Hitler was, to himself, morally justified.
Well, let's look at something that's in that time period, but on the different side of things. America had shipyards that were obviously very important to the war effort. Those shipyards were run by the mob. Mm-hmm. They were run by organized crime. And we had to cut various deals with mob lords to give them free passes, to let them out of prison, to do a lot of things, to protect those shipyards. Precisely, to protect those shipyards so we could fight the Nazis. Does that make the mob leaders good guys?
But they really believe in family.
And so
now, that's a kind of a trap to get into. It's like, you know, situations, but really, that, to my mind, that's when you're playing a fantasy game, those situations are really broad because death is so inconsequential and it's everywhere. Things die and get killed all the time in brutal ways. I mean, even if you're a family and you want to eat, you kill the pig in front of your children, you know, and it's running around, and that happens all the time. Translate that to a guy would have no problem slaughtering a bandit in the middle of the road and walking on.
Look at, like, Jack Sparrow from the...
Okay.
The Pirates movie. He's definitely a rogue. He's a bad guy. He's going to lift your wallet if you're not looking. Is he going to murder you in your sleep?
Maybe.
No. He claims he has.
I don't think so.
Yeah, he claims he has.
He plays a certain game that he does. But
within the movies, though, at least off the top of my head, I can't think of that many people
Nitpicking your point. I mean, I don't want to nitpick your point. Your point is valid. Because he's set up a situation, he's set up a character where you kind of know, even though he's a rogue and he talks a big talk, he's going to do the right thing.
Maybe. If your back's turned, he is going to take your wallet.
Yeah.
And maybe that's the money you need for your mortgage.
Don't get me going on what Lucas did to Han Solo, because that's exactly the problem I had with all the Star Wars games.
But that,
because Han Solo was a rogue and then he got castrated. He did.
He fell in
anyway,
love.
Don't get me started.
Well, it just goes back to... Not every villain or every player character needs to be frothing at the mouth, bloodthirsty killer. You can have a bad guy that just wants to steal a wallet that isn't comfortable killing.
I have absolutely no problem when I run a game with people playing blatantly evil characters. Because you're evil, that does not mean you murder an orphanage full of people. It does not mean you kill the party in your sleep. It means
actually, murdering an orphanage full of people is evil, but picking a pocket isn't necessarily evil.
Yeah, that doesn't mean that you're walking down the path to burn orphanages or betray the party. You can have absolute love for every member of your family. I mean, think of the mafia thing. You love and protect your family, but you're going to whack that dude.
And you have a code. I mean,
yeah, you have a code.
Classic mafia had a code. You do not kill a man in front of his wife or children.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
people have motivations and they're nuanced.
Just like the samurai. I mean, they had a code by which they did what they did. But what they did in many cases was obviously very terrible, very terrible things.
Let's take the whole death thing off the table. Combat death is gone.
All right.
Are there other things people do that are evil? Picking pockets, stealing from other player characters.
Well, I don't know. Our two game sessions ago, torturing a prisoner.
Yeah.
Hello.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, in our L5R game, and here's how they got around it, because they're moral rules lawyers is what they are.
Well, it's because it's actual play. We get notes like weeks afterwards.
But they captured one of several ninjas, and they happened to capture him alive, and torture is not something that samurai are supposed to do. It's very unseemly. So they had one of their underlings do it.
Kind of like the CIA.
Yeah. I'm judging you right now.
But that's the question that needs to be asked about this. Is first of all, samurai are above the law anyway. Whatever they do is right because they're samurai, so it doesn't really matter. But the point is, you gave us a situation where we needed to figure out what was going on. There was no other way to do it but without getting it from the ninja. What was there? Well, maybe.
I don't know.
He almost just said something.
No. Well, I don't know. We're getting a little derailed.
I
wonder, and I've brought this up before, do we as GMs set up situations where the players do not have any other choice but then to do something evil?
That's a very good point.
Are we creating the monsters?
Are the players just conditioned to believe they have no other choice? Have they played in games for years where that was the only option because there were new GMs that had no idea there were other options on the table?
Do you allow them? We had ninjas there and we figured the most immediate response was torture ninja. Is there another option? Was there another option? Did the DM allow it? Stu's over here giggling like, yes, there was another option. But to a player's point of view, I guess we were conditioned to thinking this was our only option. We got to grab it.
And that's the thing that kills me, because we were playing the game where everyone plays paladins.
Well, yeah. But that's why you did that, right? To put us in a really, really uncomfortable... Oh, God. Every one of us is double-checking every box to make sure we're doing
that's the
right
thing.
That's the
great thing. It's hard to get players to play good guys. Yeah. But if you can, and if you know... That's one of the reasons I like L5R. If you know what their moral code is, when you're coming up with adventure ideas...
It's not only that you know, it's that everybody in the city knows. Oh, you're a samurai. Sure. Here's your code.
Let me ask you this. To play... Yeah. a good guy, does the good guy have to have a moral code? Does there have to be a moral absolutism within your game for that character, for that person to be able to play a objectively good person?
I would say a moral absolutism for the individual character, absolutely. I think there is that. It does not necessarily have to be, I follow this religion, I've sworn an oath to this code of honor. But I think it's necessary for the player, when he's making the character, to define that character's moral limits, what he is willing and not willing to do.
I think it depends on the player, but having a strict code certainly keeps everyone in line. Yes.
Well, I mean, let's look at the movie The Dark Knight. What separated the Batman from Joker? I mean, this was something that even the mobsters pointed out to him. You have rules. He didn't have many, but he had a handful of rules that he would not cross. There were things that he would not do that kind of kept him within a box where, I mean, you can argue whether he was a good guy or not, but he certainly was not as bad as those around him.
The Joker was actually a great example of a true neutral character who is probably more frightening than a lawful evil, because lawful evil and even chaotic evil, you kind of know what they're going to do, but true neutral, they have no idea. They're just going to do whatever they want to do because at that time, that's what they felt like doing. And they can be absolutely devastatingly frightening. And so anyway, I'm sorry.
But there is, I think, a question here that has to be dealt with at the group level. And I'm going to stress this has to be dealt with at the group level because of the fact that I think every group's going to have a somewhat different answer. And on top of that, without crossing lines that we have elected not to cross, I can't deal with it on the podcast, which is, in order to deal with the question of, am I playing a good character? You do at least on some level have to define, what is your model of good? What does it mean to be good? And this is a question that has been wrestled with by philosophers, by sociologists, by psychologists, by religions, by thinkers, you know, by countless types of people over the
years. Are you saying that we can't answer this in half an hour?
No, you're telling us.
We can answer it.
We are Fear the Boot.
Really?
We will dictate to you what is good.
But, you know, and there was a forum discussion that we had going. I wasn't participating in it, but several people kind of threw out, look, there are even all these models of how do you define good? Do you use a Kantian model? Do you use utilitarianism? Do you use, you know, something like a Judeo-Christian model? There's all these different models for setting that out. And that's something the group has to deal with. And I got into a debate, almost argument, with a player many years back because I had this idea that I wanted to try in a game. And this was a D&D game where I wanted them to start effectively with a non-alignment. And then as they did things in the game, I would move their alignment in a different direction.
A lot of video games do that.
Yeah, that basically based on what you do, forget your ideal of yourself. You may think you're chaotic good, but the truth is what you're doing is actually neutral evil. And so I would push them along the law and chaos and good and evil track. And they didn't so much have a problem with the law and chaos track, and most of the characters or players didn't even care about the good or evil track. But I had one player who really got bent out of shape, because how dare I judge his character's actions as good or evil?
Judge.
Because if he, as a player, had a different moral standard than I did, then this to him was a huge problem. Because if to him it was a good action, if he could validate it in his mind, then I had no right to call it something other than what he would call it. Now, was he right, wrong? I don't know. I'm really not interested.
No, Dan, you know, we're Fear the Boot.
He was wrong.
There you go.
It's a freaking game. He really should have just gotten over it.
Yeah. You're Fear the Boot. He's not.
Yeah.
You're right.
That's well,
right.
And on top of that, it was just a freaking game. It's really not that big of a deal. It's not like I was like judging him as a person. But the point being, though, that I think you do have to establish in order to answer the question of are we playing good guys? And this is what I think speaks to the complexity of it, is what does it really mean to even be the good guy? The difficulty with playing an evil character for most groups is that eventually that evil starts to creep you out. It starts to cross lines that people don't want to cross.
But, it's exhausting.
Well, but it tends to happen consequentially. You do something evil, and then somebody who maybe that action hits a little too close to home for them starts to get offended. But good, the problem is on the other side. It's not the consequence of the action. Sparing somebody's life is
you
not going to
bastard.
Is not going to freak somebody out.
Yeah.
But it's more defining up front, is sparing a life of an evil orc a good action?
Yeah, let's chain him to a tree instead of killing him, and we'll Leon, and then he dies of starvation and hunger, which is much more evil than actually just killing him, which is what an orc would have respected.
Well, and going back to the Batman example, a lot of people say that Batman can't be good because he doesn't kill Joker, and Joker is going to keep coming back and killing more people.
Batman's not good because he's a vigilante and doesn't believe in criminal justice.
Yeah, and I'm not one of the people that stands by the Batman should kill Joker. I don't think Batman should kill.
I think Batman should not kill Joker and give up the bat suit and go to an insane asylum and get some help for his many problems.
He's too rich for that.
Haven't you played Arkham Asylum? That's that whole plot. My point being that good people do evil all the time. It's just in hindsight, you realize how evil it was. Well, we spared those bandits. Yeah, you left them chained to a tree. They died a miserable, horrible death. Yeah, you guys are really good. But we didn't kill him.
It gets into the question of the sort of moral choice. A butterfly gets trapped in a spider web. Do you free the butterfly? If you free the butterfly, you make the spider starve.
Yeah.
You know? What's the answer then?
Right.
And oh I don't God. Think this is...
No, no.
And I certainly don't think any of these are issues that we can...
deep.
Or even, in my mind, really want to unpack in this episode. But I think really what the interesting mental exercise of this has been... is how hard it really is to even understand, much less play, the good guy in a game, whereas so many people just presuppose, well, because we are the protagonists of the plot, therefore we must be the good guys.
It's really corny to play a character who is absolutely evil. And it's also really boring and corny to play a character that's absolutely good and untarnishable. It's really interesting to play a character who is not necessarily in the middle, but who can change and evolve over time. An evil person that can become good, a right. good person that can become corrupt, a person who doesn't know if they're good or evil, or who is trying to search and journey for that truth. That's where the
interesting
character comes in.
Isn't that why we're doing this? Isn't that why we do it? It's the journey, not the destiny. It's that arc of character development.
The Dresden Files.
Yes.
I love that series.
Jim Butcher, Dresden Files, Harry Dresden.
My favorite character, Michael.
Michael.
I love Michael. By any definition, that guy's a paladin.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah. Modern day paladin.
But he is a moral rock.
He is, but, and yet...
And he's had...
absolutely interesting, isn't he? He's not played like the douchebag paladin everybody plays paladins like.
But when he happens to be in the book, he is Harry Dresden's conscience.
Yeah.
Don't yada yada the Lord. That whole thing. When that character shows up in a book, I'm like, oh, yeah, this is my favorite guy.
I kind of like Molly myself.
Yeah. Well, and I think it also shows another, just the difference in good when you get guys like Sonya in, who's also a good guy, but he is good in a very different way than the paladin that is Michael. But they're filling the same role.
Jim Butcher's very good at exploring those gray areas. And he loves to put in every paladin you've ever... he did a werewolf book, right? He brought in werewolves I didn't even know existed. And put all the werewolves ever in one book. And he kind of does that with the paladins. He brings in all the kind of different paladins that you've ever heard of in one book and plays them off each other. And they're great for that. You sit around and go, oh, well, that's a great way. Oh, there's another great way to play it. Oh, there's another great way to play it.
Mighty but fierce.
I love Jim Butcher, Dresden's Files, for that. He's actually written a better series, I think. It's the second series. And he explores a lot more of that, but it's better paced. Harry's always got the sort of Bugs Bunny wisecracking thing he always has to get back to. It kind of, you know, solves everything. He just makes a wisecracking, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, whoop, and off he goes again. Sorry, I derailed that. We were talking about evil.
Welcome to Fear the Boot.
Yes.
It's all right.
Next, Doctor Who.
Yeah.
You've done that bonus episode.
Boy, have I.
Yeah.
I kind of like Doctor Who.
I think we've taken this one about as far as we can take it, or at least as far as I care to take it. So once again, I want to thank Stu and Star for joining us from Happy Jacks, and we will have a link to their show in the show notes. If you've not checked them out in the past, you definitely want to get over there and check their show out. They put together some great material.
Thank you. Your check's in the mail.
We love you so much. And as for the rest of you guys, have a great week and great games, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2013. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.